From the United Nations Development Program, you are listening to the Learning for Nature podcast, where you will learn about nature, people, and sustainability from the indigenous peoples and local communities that are at the forefront of sustainability efforts.
Hello, everyone. My name is Charlotte, and I'm your host for today. We are here today with Richard Kachong, Executive Director of the Young Emerging Farmers Initiative in Zambia. Richard, thank you so much for joining.
Thank you, Charlotte, for having me.
The Young Emerging Farmers Initiative, or YEFI in short, is one of the 10 winners of the Equator Prize of 2023, an award that honors the remarkable efforts of Indigenous peoples and local communities for their innovative nature-based solutions to sustainable development challenges. First of all, Richard, for those of the listeners who don't know anything about the YEFI organization, could you explain who you are and what you do?
So the Young Emerging Farmers Initiative is a non-profit organization, a registered NGO in Zambia that works with young people between the age of 15 to 35 and mostly targeting indigenous young people in rural spaces. So our organization has been existing for the past 9 years now, since 2014, and we were registered as an NGO in 2015. And our sole purpose was to ensure that we engage young people in the food system, as well as ensure that their economic situation is also looked at in terms of opportunities, employment, and especially income, where income is concerned. So we are an organization that is trying to also ensure that we change the mindsets of young people about agriculture, the food system, but also ensure that they are also are sensitive to the environment where they are working in within the food system.
So why do you think that it's so important to focus on the youth when you want to make these changes?
It's very important to focus on the youths, because the fact still remains that young people are the majority. And if you look at my country and most countries in Africa, most of these countries are centered on, I think, the food system. Most of their people, indigenous people, are in the food system. They are trying to earn a living within the food system. So looking at that fact, we need to ensure that if we are looking at transitioning how the food system will operate in the next couple of years, we need to ensure that we target the right groups that are in need of opportunities, given that the food system is the immediate alternative. So young people should be prioritized to take the lead in this transformation that we so desire.
Yeah, that's true. Could you tell us about how you started this organization? What made it come to life, and what made you think that we need to make this change?
Okay, so to be honest with you, when we started Young Emerging Farmers Initiative, our goal was solely on just focusing on ensuring that young people find an alternative to, I think in Zambia, that by that time, mining was like the biggest thing. Like most young people either find mining, constructions. So when we looked at all the sectors, we realized that the agriculture sector was the one which had massive, huge potential to be able to provide these opportunities for young people. So our mandate at the time, our aim was focusing, how do we create employment for young people? Because the youth unemployment rate is quite high at the time. So when we started, I think in the first year, it was more focused on that. And then later on, after a year or so, we realized that there was a connection between human and nature, and that this was very essential for the sustainability of the future, especially for the future of the food system. And then that's when I think we just decided we needed to not to ignore that fact. And that's how we changed it in the way we operate as an organization, focusing on sustainable production and sustainability. Yeah, so it was sort of like we also transitioned along the way. Because initially the focus was different, and now we sort of combine what we were focusing on, as well as ensuring that we are also looking at the biodiversity in the spaces where these indigenous people are doing their agriculture.
Interesting. So when you say that you discovered this connection between human and nature, could you explain that a little more?
Yeah, so we do realize, I think we never run for the fact that for some of us are coming from these communities and have experienced what the climate situation, the adverse effect of climate change has done in the communities where we come from. And given that majority of the indigenous people in our country are sort of like the bearer, they're sort of like the ones that take care of this nature, these resources that are around in our country. So we recognize that fact. They're the ones that take care of natural resources in these particular areas. So there's that interconnectedness because these are the people that are taking care of this. Therefore, we need to understand that they can never be this without that. They can never be nature being preserved without the indigenous people taking care of it. And the indigenous people cannot survive without these resources. So there's this interconnectedness between the two, human and nature.
So how is the ecosystem you are protecting and why is it important to protect this area?
Okay, so I'll give you an example so that you just get the idea of why it was quite alarming. At the time when we were starting, there was a record of over 100,000 trees were being cut down per year in Zambia. And majority, over 65% was due to activities that have been done by farmers, indigenous farmers, young people. Well, they were cutting down these trees so that they can either use it for fuel or charcoal itself, where they're able to sell as an alternative income generation activity. So unfortunately, that was the situation at the moment. And at least by now, we could say, I think in the areas where we're working in, that we have seen the reduction of that. Trees were being cut down at a very alarming rate that we decided we needed to do something about it, because these indigenous people were looking for an alternative income generation activity, and we needed to provide that alternative, or we needed to work with these indigenous communities and find the best alternative apart from what they were doing, which were not very supporting ecosystem preservation. So that was the situation. So we realized that we needed to do something. And when we did our own surveys, we found out that farmers were actually the majority players who were actually cutting down trees, either for these agricultural practices that are not, I would say, they're still old more way of doing the conventional way of doing agriculture, or they were just cutting down to clear land so that they're able to just expand their productivity. So we realized that there was a need for us to come in and see how we can work with them. And funny enough, most of these communities have solutions. I think it's just a way of finding out how best you can create a platform for them to actually tap in certain support structures for them to actually switch to either alternatives or come up with new innovations with the technology that we have at the moment, so that they're able to switch from what they're doing to a better way of engaging within the agriculture sector.
Wow. Could you share some of the biggest challenges you've encountered and how you managed to overcome them?
Okay, so one of the biggest challenges that we had was the mentality, the mindset of most young indigenous people that were engaging in these spaces. I think because of what they've gone through, how they've been engaged by past either civil society or any stakeholders within the food system, also affected how they were perceiving certain things, how they were looking at certain ideologies, as well as just new way of doing things within the food system. So we had to sort of come up with innovative ideas to reach out to young people, to be able to capture their attention and make them see the food system differently, and not just as an income generating opportunity, but as well as an opportunity to preserve their ecosystems where they are living in. And the other challenge was also as an organization, because we solely started just by financing our own work. I think we never waited for donor funding. And I think that's one of the for us, it's a success, but it was a big challenge. We had to finance our own activities and from our own businesses just to invest in this, because we believe that this initiative will play a very key role in transforming the food system in our country, to help these young people that we were working with, just to facilitate, to amplify their voice, as well as build capacity so that they're able to stand on their own and be resilient within the sector. So we had challenges just to get that running. So it sort of took a toll on us as well, before we actually got confidence from other institutions to be able to partner with us and see how we could work together. So that was a big challenge as well. And we also had, I think, an issue to do with political will, because there was this disparity in terms of what governments by then were saying and what they were doing. So you would say, you'll find government making statements public about how they want to conserve nature, how they want to promote sustainable production. But the biggest funded programs are under the authority of government, were doing the opposite of what they were saying. Markets as well. So markets, I think it's a story we keep on talking about. So it's an issue, because we always tell our authority to say, as long as indigenous communities in the food system are not making profits, they will keep on doing what they've been doing in the past, because that's what they believe is providing them that income. So markets that are responsive as well, providing a premium price, was and still is a problem. But we're seeing progress. We're seeing, the future looks bright, looking at what's been happening in the past decades or so. So I think, for the national, I think these were some of the issues that we faced and currently are facing as well.
Wow, that sounds like a lot. And you talked about one of the biggest challenges being changing the mindsets of these young people. So I'm curious, how did you do that? How did you manage to change their way of thinking about how to approach this?
Yeah, so it's not the easiest thing to do. But it's feasible, depending on how you approach it. So when we started engaging young people in the first year, second year, we actually realized the fact that one of the reasons why most young people in Zambia were not being responsive to some of the programs and projects that were designed by other stakeholders, even non-state actors within the food system, was that there was little, or it was not, they were not necessarily prioritized as a group of people. I think they never felt like that. It's a situation where we come up with a project and then we just say we are going to engage young people, because they were not meaningfully engaged. They were just asked to participate. So it's an issue where they are engaged with other folks. And, you know, we have these different, I think, dynamics within these communities, different communities we work in. So certain communities, especially young people in general in Zambia, they are sort of a bit resistant to express themselves around older folks. We have some cultural issues, heritage, and so forth. So there's a way of us engaging young people, older folks at that level. So you find that they were not comfortable most of the time. So when they found that there was an organization that just prioritized them specifically, say, we have this particular program or project, we want you to engage and partner in this particular project, and you'll be the major beneficiary, direct beneficiaries to this. So that also, I think, helped us to get friction from young people, positive response and feedback, where they're able to be comfortable to talk to fellow young people, as well as seeing, giving us an opportunity to talk to them, so that they see this differently from how they were looking at it before, because I think it has never been branded or advertised in a good way. Because I think agriculture in my country in the past, when anyone thinks of it, they just think of someone who's poor, those in rural areas. I think very few young people will look at it as something that they can engage in to create income, resource, wealth, and so forth. So that also helped. And it was also an opportunity for us to also show our innovative way of actually thinking and engaging young people. So we came up with what we're calling My Farm, My Swag campaign. That was one of the catchiest, campaign that we have. I think it's still running. We still use that campaign to design most of our programs because it's sort of just catch the attention, caught the attention of young people. When you say My Farm, My Swag, I think if a young farmer would be particularly interested, especially a young a teenager would be like, okay, what do you mean by swag and why is swag being associated with a farm? So that also became like an opportunity for us to sort of now have that moment where someone is able to listen to you and give you very honest feedback and see how best you can help them. So that was, I think, one of the reasons that we were successful in terms of getting the attention of young people. Yeah.
That's amazing. I love that. That's so nice. So let's talk a little bit about sustainability. How is your organization working towards achieving the sustainable goals?
Okay, so we initially, when we look at what we do as an organization, I think you'd think we just look at SDG number 2, zero hunger. Yes, that's the priority because we're in the food system, but we're also looking at SDG number 8 because we're trying to also see how do we also stimulate sustainable or decent job opportunities for young people. Because in as much as we want to ensure that we want to be sustainable, we need to ensure that that sustainability is also just. And when you talk about having a just ecosystem, we're also looking at how fair things are for the players that are actually key in the food system. And those are young indigenous people we are working with. So we are also looking at how to create sustainable jobs, sustainable enterprises so that young people are able to build enterprises, social enterprises within the food system that will create employment for more young people. So we are also working on that. So far, at least we have about 1,000 jobs that were created for young people within the food system, where about 20 plus enterprises have been developed and they're now functional. And these are some of the enterprises that are providing these opportunities, job opportunities for their fellow young people. Yeah, so we have been working around that. But as well as SDG number 13, because I think this is one of the reasons why we were recognized by the Equator Prize. Because you know, the majority of the farmers that are working in these rural spaces have been practicing conventional farming. So there's this heavy use of synthetic fertilizers and chemicals. Yes, we cannot completely stop fertilizers and synthetic fertilizers and chemicals just over a day or just within a short period of time, but it's a process. So we've been working around how best they can transition. And I think that's where the incentive comes in, because the issue of climate finance should be, I think, emphasized. In as much as we are talking about promoting sustainable production, it has to be backed with resources, because if it's not going to be backed with resources, it will just be what I usually call tokenism. Like we go at the COP, we speak. I think one of the my colleagues at my organization usually say we talk good English at the COP and then we come back and then we don't do anything. No significant actions are done, especially where finances are concerned, because that's where the key is. We cannot do anything else without financing, and that's where the problem has been. So we are looking at also stimulating initiatives to also just mobilize resources at local level. What can we utilize that is available there, since we can still keep on waiting for the resources that are not coming from the global north? Yeah, so that has also been one of the issues that we've been working on. But we're also sensitive to the fact that the gender aspect as well is key within the food system, because majority of our beneficiaries actually are women, young women, because they are even the majority within the population. So looking at the food system in Zambia, you find that they are the ones that actually do the manual work within the farm. They are the one that does the work, the front line players or actors within the food system are women, even as much as they might not have land rights and so forth, but they're the ones that actually do the work. So we're also working around that gender issue to ensure that we bring some sort of balance, ensure that also women also have decision-making position within the food system. They are owning land as well as just ensuring that they also have access to financing as well and markets as well. So we prioritize women in most of our programming. If you came to EF, you find that almost 90%, if not 95%, you find maybe one or two programs have done, maybe it's a 50-50, but most of our programming are 60-40. So women are like the priority target groups that we work with, because we are trying to also ensure that we bring some balance within the food system, because women are custodians of not only nature in these communities, but as well as just agriculture itself, because traditionally, they're the ones that actually preserve seed in our culture. So they are like key players within the food system. So how do you bring them on the table and ensure that their voices are amplified and their suggestions are taken seriously and not just a voice we want to hear so that just we tick the box that a woman has spoken? No, we're talking about making decisions, owning enterprises and so forth. So young women are some of the players that have been emphasizing, encouraging to ensure that they lead these processes within the food system. Yeah.
That's so amazing. I feel almost very emotional right now as a woman. I just love to hear that. It's amazing what you do.
No, thank you so much.
If you could give out a message to young people who would also like to start their own environmental organization or initiative, or anyone in the world who wants to do anything to make this world a little better, what would you say to them?
I think I would say it's something that I always emphasize. I think start by caring first before anything else. I think start by caring about your neighbor, your community, nature itself. Care about that before you actually think about creating, whether it's an enterprise or an organization within the food system, because that really matters at the end of the day. Because if when you start by caring first, it will be easier for you to actually ensure that you focus on how you can create a sustainable vehicle, regardless what might be, whether it's an enterprise, a business, or an organization working with young people. So you start by caring first. It's very, very important, because I think we end up, I think, losing our way along the way because of what's going on around the world, things that we interact with within the system, whether in the food system. But if you care that much, you will never be moved by that, and you continue focusing on what you want to do and achieve in your community.
I love it. Okay, Richard. Thank you so much. You should feel so proud of yourself and your organization, because this is amazing.
Oh, thank you so much, Alit. I think it's a passion that drives me. I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing if I didn't care.
For more stories about sustainable development, please go to the Learning for Nature channel. Thank you for listening.